love singing along with that, getting a little vocal warm-up. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our book pick segment for this Tuesday morning. We have a wonderful family of independent bookstores. We are blessed to have such wonderful stores in our region. They supply us our book picks. We've been doing this for over 20 years. We have a rotating list of bookstores that come on the program with us. We are thrilled that Bennington Bookshop is one of them. After spending lots of time reading dozens of books and studying up, owner Phil Lewis joins us this morning with a terrific list of books to share. Phil Lewis, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Joe?
I'm well. Thank you very much. How are things in the new location of the Bennington Bookshop going?
Oh, we love it. It's bright and airy, and it's just a special place.
Well, that's terrific. All right, let's begin with the books on your list.
Okay, first up, we've got Here We Are by Graham Swift. I loved Graham Swift's earlier novel, Last Orders, and so was excited to get hold of a copy of his latest novel, Here We Are, which recently came out in paperback. In Last Orders, Swift took a simple premise, a group of friends gathering to scatter the ashes of their dead friend, and spun it into a rich tale of friendship and rivalry, trust and betrayal. It was a masterpiece. Well, he's done it again. This time, rather than East London, we're in Brighton on the south coast of England. It's 1959. Three friends work the theatre at the end of the pier. They're booked for the summer in a vaudeville performance designed to entertain the sleepy summer crowds after a day of sunshine, ice cream, and family squabbles. There's Jack, the master of ceremonies, timing his entries and exits to perfection. His scintillating patter carries the audience between acts. He is the glue that holds the various acts together, building suspense and anticipation for what's to come next. And then there's Ronnie and Evie, top of the bill. Ronnie is a magician at the peak of his game, and Evie is his dazzling assistant. Their final act is what the audience has come for, the tricks, the sleight of hand, the disappearing. The audience gasps at each new twist. From these simple ingredients, Swift conjures up a wonderful story of love and loss. It's a sweeping tale that bubbles along with a seeming life of its own. But Swift is in perfect control. Slowly we learn how Jack and Ronnie meet, how Evie fits in, and how they all end up in Brighton for the summer. There are small details revealed here, a snippet added there, a little bit of history backfilled. I could summarize the storyline in a single short sentence, a line drawing. Swift has taken these simple lines and added breadth and color to create a masterpiece. Here We Are is so well crafted, it's an absolute delight to read.
Excellent. It is Graham Swift's Here We Are. Next up.
Next up is Fuzz by Mary Roach. So her latest book, Fuzz, is subtitled When Nature Breaks the Law. So even without reading the back cover, we know this is a book about policing rogue animals and plants that have in some way transgressed the bounds of expected behavior. The book begins with a step back into history, a court case in northern Italy in 1659 against a flood of caterpillars responsible for destroying people's crops and gardens. The caterpillars were summoned to court, but, surprise, surprise, none appeared to answer the charges. In their absence, the judge decreed that the caterpillars had a right to live free and happily, provided that did not impair the happiness of man, and granted the caterpillars a plot of land for their own enjoyment. Fast forward to the present. As we expand further and further into the habitats of wild creatures, our interactions with them become ever more frequent and intense, which begs several questions. How should we deal with the intransigent bears, the wolves and cougars, the foraging elephants, the nesting albatrosses blocking the Air Force runway? Do we have the right to decide who is more important, us or them? And are there humane methods for resolving human-animal conflicts? Roach researches human-wildlife interactions around the world. There are bears that break and enter in search of food, marauding macaques that mug and steal, drunken elephants that trample a villager's crop. Each chapter has a slightly different focus, with a story or anecdote from a different part of the world. Chapter 1 introduces us to the idea of crime scene forensics when the killer isn't human. It's a fascinating field. It's so easy to assume that the predator closest to a body is in fact the culprit. A wolf found near a dead hiker probably killed the hiker. But wildlife forensics can show that it was not even a wolf that made the kill, but a bear, and which individual bear was responsible. This is important information. Taking out the wrong suspect leaves the true killer in play and a continued risk to others. I think my favorite chapter was Okay, Boomer, which describes the efforts of the Air Force to keep a runway on the island of Midway clear of nesting albatrosses. They try elimination, but within a year the number of nesting birds bounces back. They try harassment, with no observed effect. They try moving the nest, only to watch as the birds return to the exact position of the original nest and begin to rebuild. Nothing works, and a wary airman predicts that, when it's all over, the birds will remain and the humans will have gone. This was a fascinating read, posing lots of questions for how we, human beings, impose our will on the world around us to devastating effect.
Mary Roach is the author of the new book, Fuzz. Next up.
Next up is I Am Not Who You Think I Am by Eric Rigstad. Vermont author Eric Rigstad's latest book, I Am Not Who You Think I Am, came out a couple of weeks ago. It's quite different from the crime stories of his earlier books. The book begins with the arrival of a package at Shireborne Police Station. Years before, a huge fire had destroyed the Vander's mansion, the home of the town's wealthiest and most influential family. The package documents the events leading up to the burning of the house and the tragic loss of life of the occupants. It is a confession of sorts, an atoning for past deeds. The story begins when 8-year-old Wayland Maynard witnesses the apparent suicide of his father. As the man tumbles forward from the bed where he has shot himself, a piece of paper flutters from his hand. Wayland picks it up and reads, I am not who you think I am. Who, then, was his father? And where was his mother when she was always home at this time of day to catch the latest episode of her favorite soap opera? 8 years later, out hunting with a friend, Wayland catches a glimpse of a figure in the attic window of a carriage house beside the Vander's mansion. Who can it be? And why are they in the attic of the carriage house? Wayland is determined to find out, but the town is hiding a secret and nobody wants to talk. As he digs into the past, strange details of his father's death come back to him. Wayland is persuaded that the man who shot himself in the bedroom was not his father, but someone else. He scours the newspapers from the time of his father's death for clues and finds hidden messages in his father's old books. But each discovery only serves to deepen the mystery. Wayland is convinced his father's note is the key to the mystery. But how? I'm Not Who You Think I Am is a gripping thriller, much darker than Rigstad's other books. It's a compelling and satisfying read.
Eric Rigstad is the author of I Am Not Who You Think I Am, which is just out. All right, next up.
Next up is The Sentence by Louise Erdrich. And this is a sneak preview. The Sentence will be released on the 21st of November. Where to start? There are so many layers to this story, all packed into the year between All Souls Day 2019 and All Souls Day 2020. There are ghosts and politics, and the best description of the inexorable slide into the pandemic I have read. There's chaos and warmth, passion and love and marriage. Louise Erdrich herself makes a cameo, not a terribly flattering one, and her bookshop, Birchbark Books, provides the stage for many of the events. And then there's Tookie. What a character, flawed and sometimes hopeless, but loving and lovable. Tookie works in the bookshop. She loves to read. It was books, after all, that helped her survive the long years in prison for a crime she didn't know she was committing. So, the bookshop job is a godsend. And, for the most part, she likes the customers. All but one. Flora, the shop's most irritating customer. Then Flora ups and dies. But 5 days after dying, she's still coming to the bookshop, haunting her favorite sections. At first, only Tookie can see her, but she finally persuades a couple of her colleagues of the existence of the ghost. They try all the classic remedies to oust the ghost, but nothing seems to work. It seems Flora is determined to remain until she gets a special message across. And what a message it is! This is such a good novel. It entertains on so many levels. It's humorous and thoughtful. I love the description of the push-me-pull-you relationship Tookie has with her daughter, and her crazy relationship with her husband, Pollux, the man who arrested her all those years ago. The real-life grief and loss of the 12-month span of the novel provide a powerful backdrop. This novel is so well observed, rich, and satisfying.
Louise Erdős is the author of The Sentence. Good news, it is actually coming out on November 9th, and I only know this because she is going to be our guest on that day on the book show to talk
Excellent.
About the new book. She is fantastic. I agree with you. The book is just magnificent. And so she'll be
wonderful.
With us on the program and obviously on the release date of November 9th. But it's Louise Erdős, who just won the Pulitzer Prize, so good for her. It's a great follow-up. The Sentence is the name of the novel, and it's published by Harper. All right. Next up, I guess, final book.
Last up is Notes on an Execution by Dania Kukavka. And please note, this is another sneak preview. It comes out in January. It will be a long wait. This is such a good read. It's gripping and intense, devastating and beautifully written. 12 hours. That's how long the convicted murderer has left to live before he's executed for the murder of 4 women. The countdown begins. Tick, tock. The guard calls. Inmate, identify yourself. Ansel Packer, 999-631. Flashback, Lavender, young and pretty and full of life. In love, too, with Johnny. Johnny is older, a no-good control freak who lives alone on a battered old farm. Lavender drops out of school, moves in. Life is a hard scrabble. And then there's a pregnancy, and another, and Lavender runs, calling the police as she does so to alert them to her abandoned children, Ansel and his younger brother. It's the early 70s, and California is calling Lavender. 10 hours. Next we meet Safi. Safi is 11 years old. She lives at Miss Gemma's, a care home for orphan children. At night, she lies awake in her bed in the room she shares with Kristen and Leela, dreaming of the boy downstairs, Ansel Packer. At dinner that night, Ansel had winked at her, and now she knows she is in love. 8 hours. Jenny, Ansel's wife, makes an appearance. She meets Ansel at college. They visit Jenny's parents, and we meet Hazel, Jenny's twin sister. Woken in the middle of the night, Hazel looks out of the window and sees Ansel burying something in the backyard. Next morning, she's not so sure and thinks it might just have been shadows stirred by the wind or her vivid imagination. The countdown continues. Ansel has established some sort of relationship with one of the prison guards. He has plans to escape. He'll make a break for it as they transfer him from the prison to the execution chamber. Safi is now a detective with the New York State Police. 3 bodies have just been discovered, 3 young girls. They've been missing for years. From these threads, Kukavka weaves a complex and thought-provoking novel. The book is so well-paced that the tension is almost unbearable. There's no last-minute redemption here, no forgiveness, just a great story, skillfully told.
The name of the book is Notes on an Execution by Dania Kukavka. Am I right on that?
That's how I said it.
All right. Well, if we both say it and we say it convincingly, it has to be true. Excellent.
Well, and we agree with each other.
That's right. Notes on an Execution is the name of the book. For more information on the Bennington Bookshop in Bennington, Vermont, you can go to their website. It's BenningtonBookshop.com. BenningtonBookshop.com. And Phil, give the address of the new store.
It's 109 South Street, Bennington. It's just south of the clock at the main intersection in downtown Bennington.
109 South Street, and again, you can find out information by going to BenningtonBookshop.com. You can also see the list on our website, which is wamc.org/roundtable. Phil Lewis, thanks so much for sharing your picks with us. It's always a pleasure to have you on our program.
Thanks, Joe. Have a nice day.
Be well. You too. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.